I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Nathan Hirsch. Nathan is a serial entrepreneur and expert in remote hiring and e-commerce. He's been selling online for over 7 years and has sold well over $25 million worth of product through his e-commerce business. He's now the co-founder and CEO of FreeUp.com. That's FreeUp with three E's, the hands-on hiring marketplace connecting hundreds of online business owners with reliable, pre-vetted remote workers. FreeUp is redefining how businesses are able to hire remote freelancers online. Nathan, welcome to the show.
David, thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
So I know that there's been a lot of transformation in the working world. And let's start off by talking a little bit about what you see as some changes that are taking place in the way we work.
Yeah, so everything is going more towards remote working. I mean, it started off with a lot of e-commerce companies, people like me that owned businesses that didn't really require overhead, and we could hire people from the Philippines or hire people that could work from home and still do customer service or run our ads. And it's really expanded from there. I mean, I was just at a conference last week, and you have all these doctors, lawyers, dentists that have really opened their eyes to remote hiring, being able to take stuff like their website and their marketing and their content and not have someone in-house. And on the other side of it, workers are realizing is they don't have to go into their office every day and have a career and really grow and build up the steps of a company. They can go out and start their own freelance business, even if they're not really selling a product. They can offer a service. They can build a team. They can do it solo or start. What I've seen is a lot of people will have a full-time job. They'll go home from work. They'll pick up a few side clients, realize how much fun it is and relaxing and rewarding. And then they'll start really building a freelance business and hiring a team and offering their services either on the FreeUp marketplace or other marketplaces. And they've left their full-time job. So I've been seeing this more and more. People who are really excited about the opportunity to freelance and work remotely and businesses that are able to benefit from it.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this as you're describing how work has changed. I remember this is going back probably like 15 years ago. A friend of mine told me that her brother, who is a radiologist, had moved halfway across the world and was still working for the same hospital that he had been working for in the States. And he was still getting an American salary and living in a country where it was way cheaper. And I'm thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. And I guess this has really accelerated over the last 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's really growing. We've seen a huge increase of the amount of people that want to freelance. We've seen people that haven't freelanced before, and they just want any opportunity to get into it, whether it's a low-paying rate or some opportunity to get that chance from work from home and have their own clients and really manage their own business. So we're seeing a rapid increase. I can't tell you how many people have left their full-time job or started to increase their hours or even in 1 year taken that solo operation and started adding people to their own team to offer different services and really build their own agency.
Right. So for somebody who wants to do exactly what you've just described, which is somebody who is currently an employee and wants to start something on the side that could eventually replace full-time employment, what are the steps? What's the thinking that person needs to go through? And what are the steps he or she should take in order to start to build something that could then replace formal employment?
Yeah, a lot of it is getting into that mindset of an entrepreneur, because that's really what you are as a freelancer. You have to get rid of the aspect that you're an employee, that someone else is controlling what you're doing, that you have that safety net and that protection. You're really going out on your own. And there's different parts of the business, whether it's marketing your services or figuring out what your product and packages that you're selling, to what you can and cannot do, how you deal with difficult clients, the difficult situations that come up. What do you do when you're running out of work and you need to keep your team occupied or figure out how to pay the bill. So a lot of people that fail, they don't have that mentality. They think they're just going to get that one long-term client and treat it like a full-time job. And usually it doesn't work out that way. So I'm always encouraging people to treat it like a business and get it set up in the sense where you have multiple revenue streams, you're diversifying, you're minimizing risk and really acting to expand it as a freelancing business.
Okay. And then on the flip side, looking at established companies that are having people who are part of their team that are more and more remote people. What's the thinking and what are the steps that a CEO needs to go through to take advantage of the way people work today and what has changed in the way people work?
Yeah, so what I encourage CEOs to do, and I just talked about this at a conference last week, is really identify everything you're doing on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. And what a lot of CEOs are doing is they're realizing, hey, I have all these easy tasks that I can take off my plate. Let's hire someone from the Philippines and make them my assistant and show them how to do it and do these things for me so that I can focus on expanding my company rather than the repetitive tasks. And then they make a list of all the things that they're maybe not good at. What are their weaknesses? Do they have a hole when it comes to marketing or content or graphic design? And from there, they go out and they find very talented freelancers, sometimes a group of them that they can count on for these projects. So for example, I had a client that was really struggling to keep up with the graphic design work. He was selling products. He needed photos edited. He wanted new banners on his website. And he just couldn't get that from his in-house staff and because they were more focused on other things, and rightfully so. So what I helped him do was create a team of 3 to 4 graphic designers that were there on call when he needed them. And yes, so those designers had other clients and it wasn't their top priority at all times. But whenever he had a project, he would assign it to the group and whoever could take it first would do it. So he had this revolving door of work getting done whenever he needed it. And he was able to utilize contractors to his advantage to turn that weakness in his company, something that was holding him back, into a strength where he was on top of it at all times.
Are there tasks or responsibilities that you think should never be outsourced to somebody who's remote?
Whatever your core competency is. So if you're a Facebook marketing expert, you want to keep doing that over and over. And I can give you an example later about a buddy of mine, Ian, who joined the FreeUp Network. But you can hire assistants to do things and follow your system, but your actual system needs to be yours. You need to be the one updating it. You need to be the one that's looking for changes, looking for improvements, looking for changes in the algorithm. And you can teach someone to do the process and system over and over again, but you really want to keep how the system works in your hands, especially until you get to a certain point where you can really take a step back and hire a very high level employee to come in and manage that for you.
Again, but you're talking about an employee at that point, not somebody who's remote.
I mean, it could be a remote employee. That just depends how comfortable you are hiring someone remotely and really making them a full-time employee. But someone, I mean, you never want to just pass off your core competency to someone who's a contractor, someone who's part-time, someone who isn't going to make your business their priority.
Exactly. So what are some examples of companies that have smashed the plateau using some of these concepts?
Yeah, so I mentioned my buddy Ian Smith. So he worked for a company, Quantum, and they used FreeUp. They hired freelancers. They did a great job utilizing them. And I think I really opened Ian's mind to this ability to work remote. He was talking to all these workers, U.S. and non-U.S. They were working from home. They were getting a lot done. They had multiple clients, and he became addicted to that. So he ended up leaving that company, starting his own Facebook marketing business, started off as a solo freelancer, started offering his service on FreeUp, got a client base, had some outside clients as well. And then he was like, wow, this is doing great. How do I take this to the next level? So I talked to him about how other freelancers are doing it, and he started to build a team. So he has that video editor on call and the graphic designer on call and the content person. I think he hired his sister to do some side work for him as well. So now he continues to increase the amount of services he's offering. And now he's running a six-figure Facebook ad freelancing business where he started off in that full-time corporate job.
What do you think is changing in the way remote work is done? What's different about FreeUp versus some other methodologies for engaging people on a remote basis?
So when remote work started, everyone thought it was great and they kind of jumped right into it. You could get people for $1 or $2 an hour. You could get all this talent that you didn't have access to otherwise if you were just hiring people in your city or the towns around it. But then people started running into issues. There were communication issues and attitude problems, and they realized that they weren't that worker's top priority at all times, and hiring cheap wasn't always the best way to go. So a lot of the people have had bad experiences on these marketplaces, and it holds them back from hiring. And I've had very mixed experiences on all these marketplaces. I've used them a lot. I've made some incredible hires, people who are still with me, and I've made some not so good hires, people that have cost me time, money, and energy. So what I wanted to do was create a marketplace that makes it better and really accounts for a lot of these things for the client. So at FreeUp, what we do differently is instead of posting a job and getting 100 people to apply where you as a client have to go through and figure out who's who and how you want to proceed, we get hundreds of applicants every week to get into the marketplace. We have a great vetting process. We're focused on skill, communication, and attitude. And we take the top 1%, we add them to the marketplace, and we make them available to clients first come, first serve. So the clients like it because it's free. There's no monthly fee. Anytime they need a worker, they put in a request, and we fill that request with a few workers from the marketplace that are interested in the project, and then they can meet with them. It's a fast hire platform. You get 10 to 15 minutes to talk to them before proceeding, and then we back it up on the back end. If the workers quit in the middle of a project for any reason, we make sure that the client's protected. We cover the replacement costs and make sure the clients have a good experience. So we're really looking at the other marketplaces and what they're doing good and what they're doing bad and making it a great experience for the client.
And do you find that, how does that end up comparing in terms of cost or investment?
So we definitely stay away from the cheaper workers. I mean, the $1 to $3 an hour workers, we don't have. Our minimum worker is $5. We found that when you hire people for that price, they're very quick to jump on other opportunities when they get a higher paying offer. And a lot of times it leads to turnover and bad client experience. At the same time, once you get away from that low level, we're very much market value. I mean, the workers set their own rates. They know what the industry standard is. It has a lot to do with supply and demand, who's available. We have plenty of workers that I would consider high value deals that do a great job and are below market value. And other times, if everyone is looking for that Facebook ad expert, then the price goes up. But a lot of times they're worth it and they end up paying for themselves.
It sounds great. And Nathan, you've done a remarkable job of creating a business, and this is not your first business, creating a business in a relatively short amount of time. Looking back over your own experience, at a point when you were at a plateau, what were your dreams and what did you do to try to smash the plateau?
Sure. So when I was in college, I was a broke college student looking for extra beer money, and I really wanted to figure out a way to start my own business. But I was pretty realistic. I knew that it's tough to do. A lot of businesses fail, but I just wanted a way in. So I noticed the textbook company at the bookstore was ripping people off. And so what I wanted to do was cut them off and essentially give people more money for their books. So I started coming up with flyers and advertising that I was running a textbook buyback service. And before I knew it, I had lines out the door of people trying to sell me their textbooks. And from there, I started selling these books to different online vendors, came across Amazon.com one day, and I became addicted to it. I became obsessed. And I couldn't figure out how to make money on Amazon. I was trying to sell books and computers and computer games and all this different stuff. And I'd really just reached a point where, yeah, I could sell books and make money, but how long was I really going to be in college and have access to these books? What were books even going to be around at the time? I thought everyone was going to be using Kindles within a few years. So I really wanted to figure out how to make money on Amazon separate from the book business. I didn't have a warehouse. I didn't have a lot of money to buy inventory. So I came up with this concept of dropshipping years before I even knew that it was called dropshipping. And what I wanted to do was sell products I didn't have, build relationships with other vendors. And when I would sell it, I would transfer the client information to them. They would focus on making the product and shipping it, and I would make the difference. And through a lot of trial and error, I ended up growing a multi-million dollar dropshipping business in a lot of categories that I didn't think I would ever sell in, like baby products and toys and home goods, really getting outside my comfort zone. But I became really good at it, and I learned a lot of lessons along the way just from growing that business while I was in college, taking business classes, hiring people before I could legally drink and being thrown into that fire. A lot of lessons that really have helped me to this day.
You know, it's interesting. What you've described sounds like that process when you were trying to figure out how you would make money with e-commerce or through Amazon, that it must have been frustrating when, through the time that it took you to figure out what the right niche was that was profitable.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of trial and error. I mean, I never thought in a million years I'd be selling baby products on Amazon, but I tried lots of different things. I became very good at pushing certain categories, and it really expanded from there.
So what would you say was your secret to being able to cope with the frustration of all of the errors until one of them turned into something that was profitable?
I mean, a lot of it was just I was going all in. I knew that there was really no risk on my side. I mean, I was a college student. Worst case scenario, I could get my degree and get a real job, although I really didn't want to do it. So when I had free time, I was just experimenting. I was learning. I was reading Amazon's forums. I was seeing what other people were doing. I also got in at a very good time where there weren't as many sellers on different listings, and Amazon was just getting away from doing books. And I had that experience from selling books, so I knew what the potential and possibilities were. I just had to figure out a business model that actually fit where I was in my life, that I could actually execute at a high level.
Right. So learning was a big part of the process.
Yeah, a lot of learning. And a lot of times that I see today is people are going out and they're seeing how one person does it. This is how this seller makes money. And that seller is selling a course that everyone buys, and then everyone starts doing it the same way. Where I encourage people to be different, figure out what other people are not doing, how you can get that competitive advantage without copying other people. Because the second everyone starts doing the same thing, it really goes out the window at some point, and that stops being effective. And the marketplaces, whether you're Amazon or Walmart or Wayfair, they start to adjust to it as well.
So let's talk a little bit about this concept of seeing what other people are not doing, because it sounds to me like you've done this with FreeUp as well, right? Looking at what the other companies that are providing remote workers are doing and identifying what others are not doing or not doing well. What would you say are, if you had to break it down into steps, what are the steps to try to identify what other people are not doing?
Yeah. So, I mean, what I tried to do is not just be another virtual assisting company, because everyone, if you start talking to people, they've all had bad experiences with these companies. So what I tried to do is look at it from both the client and the worker side of it. On the client side, I've been a client. I've hired hundreds of remote workers myself. I've also interacted with a lot of clients. So I was able to talk to them and see what did they like? What were the positive experiences from those services? And then what was the negative? How did they get screwed over? How did they feel gypped? How did they feel like they lost money or they didn't get a value deal? And why? Why did that happen? What could we change in the business model to really minimize the chance of that happening? On the worker side, I tried to figure out what they didn't like. How do they feel like they can maximize their earnings? When did they feel like the marketplace wasn't treating them fairly and was really too focused on the client side? So I was able to put these things together to really come up with a fair process that's about as fair as you can be for both parties while really protecting each side as well. So that's really what I set out to do. And I encourage you to, if you're not a client, if you never actually purchased whatever the service is that you're selling, go to clients that have and figure out where their pain points are. What's the best experience they had buying that service? What's the worst? Why? What was the system and process? How easy was the setup? Really diving deep into the nitty gritty before you're able to offer your package or product.
Right, which also sounds to me like you need to have a lot of empathy for the people whose gap you're trying to bridge. So in the case you just described, you're trying to understand exactly how the remote worker feels and how the hiring organization feels.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really what it's all about. I mean, if you make one side really happy, but you forget about the other, I mean, the business model just doesn't work. The whole thing is dependent on both sides being happy and coming up to a fair agreement.
Right. And I think the being happy is a big part of it, because we all know that buying decisions are emotional decisions. People buy because of some emotion that they're trying to address. So understanding what that emotion is from all of the parties involved in the decision-making process is really critical. I think you've really, really nailed it on that one.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I mean, you have to understand, no matter what startup you're running, there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be errors. There's going to be situations where a client feels like they didn't get that value they thought they were going to get. And what really separates good companies from bad is, how do you handle that? I mean, we're dealing with real people here, and 99% of the time, the freelancers do a great job and we're improving the process over time. But there's always going to be situations where a client and a worker don't get along, they don't see eye to eye, something happens. And what really matters is how you handle those situations. Do you make it right quickly, or do you start making excuses? Do you take on some of the blame and look to improve and put in systems in place so it doesn't happen again, and make sure the client and the worker are taken care of, or do you look the other way and say, hey, not my problem? So that's how we've really tried to separate ourselves. Anytime there is a not perfect experience, we make it right for both parties, and we put systems in place to make sure that the process is better going forward.
Nathan, it sounds to me like you have nailed a lot of the aspects of what it takes to be a good leader in an entrepreneurial setting. And clearly it was something that you, in your description of what you started and what you worked on while you were in college, you've been at this, you thought about this early on, you've been at this for a long time. What's been some of the most transformational help for you as you've been trying to figure out how to be a great business leader?
So honestly, a lot of it was personal experiences and things that happened at a very young age. So I was fortunate enough, my parents are both teachers. I was able to get a really good upbringing where they told me how to manage my finances. They taught me how to treat people well and how to have manners and just stuff that is really the core of who I am. I was able to get a lot of opportunities, internships, people that sent their kids to my mom's private school. And I got some internships at the Aaron Corporation. Outside of that, I applied and got an internship at Firestone. So I got a lot of business experience at a young age, got into a great college, took business classes. When I started Free Up, or when I started Portlight, my Amazon business, yes, I had success along the way, but I also had a lot of turbulence. So when I first built this business to $1 million, I learned a very tough lesson about diversification. I took my first vacation. I had finally hired someone to be my manager the day. I had assigned him everything so that I could leave and take a trip. I had this one supplier. We were crushing it, selling a lot of product. And one day into my vacation, I got a message that the supplier decided to drop me. Then I got my accountant called me and said my identity had been stolen. And then my manager of the day, who I'd spent a lot of training in, quit. So I learned a pretty valuable lesson about diversifying and being able to protect your business in every different way. And I came back and I became focused on adding multiple revenue streams, adding multiple suppliers. So if one left, it wasn't the end of the world. Diversifying who I was hiring. So everyone was very departmentalized. And if one person quit, it wasn't that big of a deal. I could easily replace them. And because I was able to learn lessons like that at a very young age, it set me up for success down the line.
Right. So it sounds like also like as bad as those experiences were, you knew that they're typical of what happens to an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, my business partner and I had the mentality, it's that everything happens for a reason. And I mean, it's better that it happened now than years down the line. And it's something that every time now that we come into a situation where we might not be protected, we're like, oh, let's think about that thing that happened 8 years ago and put ourselves in a better position.
Yeah, great examples. Nathan, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job at smashing plateaus?
So I met Will Mitchell. He runs Startup Bros, and I'm just beyond impressed with their operation. They're a client of mine. I met them in person, went to a conference with them, and they do everything right. I mean, from the hiring workers and treating people well to putting out great content and really changing the way that people look at their full-time job because they're giving them an opportunity to start a large e-commerce business from scratch. And yes, I can provide the workers and take your business to the next level, but you can't even get to that point unless you've built that business. And they really take you from zero to $1 million. So he's someone I've gotten the chance to know personally. And I strongly recommend if you're listening and you haven't dived into starting a business and you're way too early to hire, definitely check them out.
Sounds great. And what can we look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up for Nathan?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot more guest speaking. I presented last week at CEO Space. I have a conference tomorrow in Melbourne, Florida. I'm looking to providing a lot of content because, like I said, Free Up, I can provide the worker, but that's just step one. Getting a pre-vetted worker is really just the beginning. The rest is teaching people how to onboard them, how to manage them, how to motivate them, how to get the most out of them. And that's what I really want to teach people how to do because hiring great workers and getting the most out of them makes you look good as a business owner. It's one of the reasons I've had success. You can't do it by yourself. And by teaching other people to do that, I think I can make a big difference in the business community.
Nathan, how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Sure. So I'm very easy to contact. If you go to freeup.com with three E's, my calendar is right at the top. You can book a free meeting with me. You can sign up as a client right on the site. No monthly fee, no sign-up fee. keep us in your back pocket when you're looking to hire. And if you mention this podcast, you get $1 off your first worker forever. Make sure that you use the affiliate link in the show notes. You can check us out on social media, the Online Hiring Mastermind group on Facebook, and my book about freeing up your business.
That's great. Well, Nathan, thanks so much for taking the time to come on Smashing the Plateau today. There have been some great nuggets in this discussion, in particular for people who are in the top seat in the business about how to really understand your customer, how to deliver real value to your customer, how to hone and take advantage of your core system for your business, and also all of what we talked about with the way people work and interact. This whole process has changed a lot over recent years, and it's only going to change more as time goes on. So I think some of the lessons that you've shared are really great ones for people who are running businesses today. So thanks so much for taking the time, as I said, to come on Smashing the Plateau today. My guest has been Nathan Hirsch, the founder and CEO of FreeUp. That's FreeUp. Thank you again, Nathan, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.